It's Wednesday, February 11th, 2009, and you're listening to episode 136 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 52 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is John.
My name is Pat.
And my name is Ed.
Of course, you're welcoming back Mr. Ed Healy. I also apologize if there's a little bit more background noise than usual, and I don't know if there will be. There just might be, because after a long, cold winter, it's like 65 degrees out today. So in the interest of reducing the chance of getting sick, I have all the windows open. So I don't know what's going to occur
and
out
because
in that street.
It's still early February and it's going to be freezing as balls again in a week. True. So we're enjoying this while we can.
I'm pretty sure I'm constantly running out of the four by six closet that I'm sequestered in.
That still works on so many levels.
She's not even older than D&D 3.0 or he, I guess. But
hey, she's already a gamer, man.
Cool. How did you do it? How do you get a 6-year-old to understand pen and paper?
Actually, my 3-year-old's a gamer too.
Other than just telling them to play pretend, and that's all there is. All
right, so if they're fighting, right, in the playroom, and I walk in there, I don't really try to figure out who was at fault, because there's no way to do it, so I bring my dice and I make them roll.
That is awesome.
You seriously have them do save against spanking?
No. Just like it's usually they're fighting over, you know, which My Little Pony they're going to get to play with or who gets the swing on the swing or whatever. Yes, we have a swing in the playroom. It's bolted to the ceiling. It's pretty cool. Anyways.
Nice.
Wow.
I never had that.
Wait, that kind of playroom. I understand.
Is this a kid's playroom or
yeah,
is this your
no, room? No. Right.
It's no, the multi-purpose playroom.
It's right next to the trapeze.
The swing of many colors or whatever the artifact name is.
No, the walls are not painted black. There's nothing else bolted to the walls. This is not a Quentin Tarantino playroom.
Sure.
No mirrors everywhere because, I mean, that's the whole point.
No, there's a lot of stickers and a lot of pictures of horses. And
oh, my.
It seems your wife has got a wandering mind.
Good Lord.
Yeah, so, you know, that came to a point where they would just ask me to, I'd go in there, they'd be yelling and screaming at each other, and I'd walk in, they'd just be looking up, waiting for me to walk in. They're like, can we roll the dice now?
Awesome.
You know, Ed,
I totally respect that. That's awesome.
See, I don't, and here's why.
I do.
How many people out there have gone through a period of their life, maybe even their whole life, where they are turned off to reading because of school? Because in school, they were forced to read so much stuff on deadline, a lot of it was crap, that people have this negative association with reading for a lot of their life. You're doing that with dice. Dice are now a form of justice and punishment. Well, for you.
No, it's entertainment for them. That's what I'm saying, man. Now they fight just so they can roll dice. It's a joke for them. They just want to. They just want me to bring the dice in.
Interesting. I know the point you're trying to make, and I agree with you on that point, Dan, is the whole fact of, and I was kind of that way as well, because I don't read all the time. I'm a slow reader just because the particular way I read. So, and it did like the, you know, reading the classics and stuff that they force feed you in school. It totally burned me out. I didn't appreciate
it. Yeah. I quit reading for several years of my life for that exact reason.
And used to be that way with like games, not like tabletop games, but like basketball. Like you have to have PE in gym and it's just not fun because, you know, you could pick last, you could beat up, all that good nerd stuff. I was right there, but, and I'm just now going to the rec center and enjoying myself without all the schoolyard trauma.
Like there comes a certain age, I guess. I think it's maybe like a certain level of maturity, and I say that very loosely, you know, considering the source here, but that you have to have before you really start to appreciate that kind of stuff again, like, you know, the books or the activities that you were forced to do. But then, like, later on when you have a little bit more life understanding, I think you actually go back in them and look at them and say, hey, this is really good stuff.
It's so much more fun when you can do it of your own volition and set the parameters.
Discover it on your own. So exactly. Or through friends, you know, like, you know, a friend tells you, hey, this is a good game. You ought to try this and or whatever.
But Ed, I think you're a good guy for introducing your kids to the game. I don't think that negative association is going to stick, especially if they're clamoring for it.
That's true.
And willing to get in trouble just so they can whip the D20 out.
Actually, I think the D12s happen to be their favorites right now.
Oh, that's weird. They're kind of wacky. Nobody uses D12.
I know. Exactly.
You should get them using D30s just so some game still uses them.
Oh, my God,
Why? Why is that a good thing? Who cares about D30s?
I just feel bad for them.
I think,
like, you were just talking about the kids get picked last for a game. That's what the poor D30 is.
The D30 doesn't even get picked at all, dude. When was the last time you got the standard dice cube and there was a D30 in it?
And I think probably everybody owns at least one. Like, I know I've got one in my dice bag somewhere.
I have never owned a D30, and I own, like, 10 sets.
I've never used it.
I don't own a single D30. I've never used one in the game. Over 20.
And I have not seen it called for in any rule book, and I've read a lot.
That's it. I'm going to create a role-playing system that uses only D30s.
That'd be awesome. They're like golf balls, man. They're just, I mean, they're not quite that big, but they're huge.
Dude, most 20-sided dice are like golf balls. They barely stop. You, like, you roll it across the table, and like you have to wait 5 minutes. You may as well go like grab a pizza or something by the time it stops
rolling.
No,
that's D100.
Yeah, that with the freaking stuff inside it that shakes and rattles. Those
no,
suck.
No, that's a Magic 8-Ball.
Yeah, pretty much.
The Magic 8-Ball has a D20 in it, I think.
Actually, yeah, it is, actually.
I want to break my old one and be like, all right, guys.
The thing's got
to
be...
Science point to maybe. Around. That's 5.
That's
now
awesome.
Roll.
That would be cool to bust open one of those, because it is. But the thing, it'd have to be about probably 3 or 4 inches across.
You have to roll probably so or better.
Probably.
My parents told me that the fluid in it would kill me if I opened it up, so I never opened it up.
That I wouldn't be surprised.
Now I realize that it probably won't kill me. So I gotta go find my old 8-ball.
It'll just maim you severely.
Yeah, just burn my hands.
I'm burned severely, but I'm still alive.
So you're going to start a new forum on the Fear the Boot forums, and it's going to be the Magic 8-Ball role-playing game. Somebody has to... free downloadable rules, but in order to play, you have to actually break open the Magic 8-Ball and use it in play.
So I know at least 3 of us here are MMO players, and Ed, I don't think you are, correct? Though I think you recently started an EVE account.
I've played a little EVE, yeah, and I glanced over the shoulder at somebody playing WoW a couple times, but other than that... MMOs are kind of like, it's like the same reason I don't pick up new sports. If I like them, they're going to be freaking expensive, both in time and money, and I just have an addictive personality, so there's only so many brain cells and dollar bills I have available.
The time is the dinger. I mean, yeah. $15 a month, I can spare that easily, because when I'm addicted to an MMO, I don't buy movies or games. Sometimes I don't even go out.
Yeah.
It saves me money, but it destroys my life.
You're not eating. You're barely sleeping.
Yeah, if you think about it, dollar per dollar, MMOs are probably one of the cheapest forms of entertainment out there.
Cents on the hour, and it stops you from spending elsewhere.
That's true.
But
it doesn't stop you from eating, so that's why you're...
I don't know. I've skipped meals to play, which is for me is a good thing. But you know, all the same.
Yeah,
I used to do that with Civ 3. Actually, I used to play that so much
Really?
Oh yeah. Well, I haven't even tried Civ 4 because
it's
be
so much better, dude.
Three
is the dark valley between 2 and 4.
You are gonna make me want to get it. So just be quiet.
Oh my god,
right?
dude, get it. It's great. Have it.
Have you guys played the console version, the
Conquerors or whatever?
Yeah.
No.
No, I mean, I would play Civ 3, and I would just sit there and play for, like, days, and, like, I wouldn't eat. I'd barely use the bathroom. Like, I'd be like, oh, just one more move. One more move.
Imagine Civ 3, except Mr. Spock kills you when you get upgrades.
Pig
then
iron.
You have Civ 4. Pig iron. I got all pig iron.
That's why I stay away from Civ 4, and that's why I don't play things like World of Warcraft or anything.
No, you don't want to.
At least with EVE, you know, if I'm going from like, I'm making like a 6-jump trip or something, I can go bake some cookies and come back. You know?
Yeah, if I was going to get back into an MMO and I don't play any now, it probably would be EVE, partially for that reason. I like a very cutthroat environment, and everything these days is for whiny, what's a polite word? Wimps.
Well, plus it's different. It's not like every other MMO where you're just playing like this one dude and you're walking around mining crap and trying to find, you know, something to whack on and grab your guys and go make a mission or whatever. It's different. Yeah. It's just different than the other ones.
Penny Arcade said it perfectly, man. When they had all the Lich King stuff, this huge banners and this massive world map, and then the last frame was this walrus that said, you know, me want to kill 8 goblins. That's all it is.
Well, Dan, you play Warhammer Online, right?
Yeah, we're still on Warhammer. That guild is still going good. You can find details on the forum if you're interested in joining us. Pat actually is... We hardly got him over here.
What? Hardly got him over here? Oh, that's true, yeah. I was this close to wanting to play this morning before I went, but I'm like, I've got to go today, so I'll wait until I get home. So yeah, it is. The guild's going well. I'm getting more people all the time. We've got, you know, one guy that's really crazy about getting people in the guild. I think he just got a toaster.
Yeah,
he's got long hair, he's kind of smelly.
And he's conspicuously quiet today.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. But no, yeah, it's But so, yeah, so we're both playing War, and so Chad does as well.
I've come to a realization, though, and I actually wrote about this on the blog. So if you're not reading the blog, you can go out there and find it. Looking for an article that was probably written by the time this drops, I guess it's been about a week ago, called Curing a Game Hopper's Disease. But
it's a very thoughtful article. I enjoyed it.
And everyone latched onto one.
Well, yeah, they all cried about.
I know.
But
yeah, there's one comment I made there in passing. I even suggested nothing about it. I just like, well, X is true. I just
kind
of.
It was a valid point. The point discussed was men and women are the same, that equal equals identical statistically. And everyone said, you know, you don't want to open that can of worms. And we really don't. I don't want to have a discussion about women's strength in role-playing games should be capped at 10. I don't believe that. I don't care. But anyway,
a lot of people latch onto that one comment kind of out of context. But the point of the article was that I have played nearly every MMO going all the way back to UONEQ1. And I guess I really can't say nearly every anymore, because over the past couple years, there's been a huge wave of them. But up until that big post-World of Warcraft rush of them,
yeah,
I had played nearly every game. I played Dark Age, EQ, EQ2.
No, there was a time when Asheron's MMO players, quote unquote, simply bought the next one that came out because there was only one more.
Right. But part of the reason that I would hop from game to game to game is because I'd get in this one game, I would decide that, you know what, it's really not that fun, or I'm not enjoying it for this, that, and the other reason. But when the next one comes out, I just know that that one's going to be so much better. And I won't rehash the points, because you can go back out and read the article if you really want to see the points. But the conclusion that I ultimately came to is that the only thing that really keeps me in a game, and the only reason that I ought to pick a game to play, is following my friends. It's the social group. Yeah, and of course, with some people, I guess, Jonna, you recently quit all of your MMOs to focus on real social interaction.
School and life, even more broadly than school. I mean, like, I go out all the time now. It's kind of nice not to be tied to a computer.
Sinner.
There's some people that I play with who I don't live around. May not even have contact information for outside of the game. And, well, I got some of them now on the forums.
Yeah.
But
no, your defense of the MMO as a remote social tool was very well thought, and I do miss that aspect. I know that if I was on War 12 hours a day, I'd be a lot better in touch with you guys. I'd know all of your mutual friends through there, and it'd be a cool community. But everything else in my life would suffer for it, and I don't want to make that trade.
I think the real point of self-discovery, as I was putting that article together, is that I really never understood why I play MMOs. And I wonder how many people that's true of, where they think a certain thing keeps them in the game. But if they really look at the history of the games they've played and the games they've dropped, that either that's not true, or they are chasing a perfect ideal that will never exist.
Yeah.
One of the two.
I was the latter for a very long time. I mean, we both got into the big Age of Conan circle jerk hard after Gen Con. We waited for it, and we got pissed when it got delayed. And it came out, and we were like, okay, this is really not extraordinary at all. So we stopped playing. Well, we did the same thing for Warhammer. I did the same thing for Warhammer anyway. And then it came out, and it was really just the same damn game that it's always been. And I thought, wow, I'm pretty silly for buying every new game that comes out, thinking it's going to be bigger, faster, stronger, and wasting $50.
Yeah, but MMOs aren't really that different than regular, any other form of entertainment, whether it's sports or, you know, pen and paper role-playing games or, you know, CCGs or whatever. I mean, I'm sure there's some hermit that, you know, some Ted Kaczynski guy that collects every game and just likes reading them. But by and large, you play because it's fun to play with other people, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. But I believe they are perniciously time-consuming and perhaps particularly addictive. Like you said earlier, I mean, you don't play World of Warcraft because you know it's going to eat your life.
Right.
These two play Warhammer all day, every day. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the only way to stay ahead, keep ahead, or even stay up.
Actually, I'm not on there that much lately. I actually need to be on there more than I am. It's probably been about a week since I've logged on.
Yeah, we haven't seen you around. And I do play probably 3 or 4 hours a day whenever I, but it's like it's late at night once I get home after working, taking care of the family, whatever else like that. So I stay up late in the night. But yeah, I'm pretty much on every day.
And I'm not trying to cast stones here or make you feel like crap for playing an MMO. A lot of people who listen do, and I did play MMOs for a very, very long time. I'm sure I'll play again sooner rather than later, but I'm finding a lot more time to enjoy myself doing other things.
Well, and I think it's also the situation, like, you know, in your situation, You know, you're in school, you're in law school, you're busy, you've got a lot on your plate. And when I was back in college, I sort of did some computer gaming, like Civilization, stuff like that. And then I moved away from it because I realized I don't have the time to do this and all my schoolwork and whatever else that I need to do. And so I quit for a long time. And then actually, I've said this before, but Warhammer is actually my first MMO ever, because all the MMOs came about after that, you know, sort of after the Civilization area for me. And I just didn't get into it because I knew I'd be addicted to it and I didn't have the time to do it. So I haven't done it until now. And so that's another aspect of it for me. So I'm on it all the time because I'm sort of a MMO virgin, as it were. And so I'm in that phase.
There is a big, I'm enamored big of it because of that virgin afterglow factor for your first MMO.
Yeah.
I mean, I played Ultima Online long, or even if you want to consider Dragon Realms an MMO, for years after they were comically obsolete, just because it was my first one and I thought I could see no wrong with it. I thought it was just the greatest thing ever.
Yeah. So like for me, you know, everything to me is fresh because, you know, in Warhammer, even though, like you're saying, it is, I can understand the fact that they are all the same. I mean, you're essentially doing the same kind of thing, no matter how you label it, whatever it's called. But
do damage, take damage, or heal damage.
Right.
These races are all the same.
Yeah.
These are the things that Dan wrote about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you see similar stuff in tabletop RPGs.
Mm-hmm.
Every new fantasy game is supposed to be unique and original. And you know what? The vast majority of them aren't.
Right. Yep.
If you really boil it down,
there are a couple settings that are truly off the wall, but most are Tolkienian.
Yeah.
Most are Gygaxian in structure. And yeah, you don't even have to boil it down that far. It's that way on its face.
So as I look around at the various forms of media and entertainment, okay, we can look at MMOs and see how, at least in my view, I think, you know, the games may be getting more sophisticated in some ways, but I don't think the very basic type of play is maturing. And I think there are reasons for that, which we're going to get to in a second here. But I see that really from media in general. And I wish Chris was on this episode. He's not. We're recording this one on a Saturday, and he's just not available right now. But I wish Chris was in here because he works for NBC. But we were having a conversation, I guess it would have been the last time we got together, about how the media companies are really fighting the old battles. And I'm going to go to role-playing games with this eventually, but bear with me on the trip there. But if you look, for example, let's take the most obvious one, the music industry. That we've reached an age where people want to be able to consume MP3s on a variety of players, variety of different modes of listen. They want to have it on their Xbox and their iPod and be able to listen to it at work. They don't want to buy whole albums. They want to pick this song or that song or the other song, kind of mix and match to their taste. And the media companies, the record companies, for a long time, completely fought that. That rather than jumping in and saying, okay, we're going to start selling stuff to that model,
they said the MP3 format itself is piracy.
Yes, precisely. And they fought the whole thing. And only just now, largely through things like iTunes, are they just now kind of starting to catch up to where they should have been 10 years ago. Chris talked about this in detail, and I won't try to reconstruct the conversation because I'll probably get all the details wrong. But he talked about how television's doing the same thing. That with a lot of TV stations, they still think they're fighting each other on the same battlefield in the same way as they were 20 years ago. They don't realize how much the world has changed. How many television stations or cable companies or movie houses are providing more and more content up front on demand? For example, how many people listening to this show, rather than catching a TV show when it comes on TV, catch them on their TiVo or whatever DVR they own, or catch them on Hulu? Or
sort of Comcast on demand where you can just watch it three days later for no reason.
I mean, I watch House and 24 because they're back to back and that's a little Monday night retreat for me. But everything other than that, I catch on the computer.
Yeah.
Yet television stations are a lot of times not providing their content up front this way. Now, some of them are. They're getting a little bit better. I know there are some TV stations where you can go out and a couple days after show airs, you can actually stream it off their own website. So they're getting a little better. We can look at podcasting as an example. Battlestar Galactica, Jericho, there were a couple of them that had parts of the show that you could get in this whole new media thing. What you want, when you want, where you want, how you want.
Yeah, Battlestar Galactica to this day uploads full episodes onto sci-fi.com pretty quick.
But it just seems like the media in general is a very, very slow thing to readjust itself to fit all these new paradigms. Which I tell you, it's been wonderful for somebody like me who's doing the whole new media thing,
yeah.
because we have been competing in a relative vacuum of anybody with multi-million dollar budgets. I'm not none of them out there, but for the most part, you know, we are the ones that are leading the way.
Right, but there are, Dan, there are some people that are starting to get the picture and starting to do some really cool stuff. I mean, look at what CNN and Facebook did for the election this year. You know, you could watch, like, live coverage, or sorry, was it the election or was it the inauguration? I think it was the inauguration. You could watch it live, and you had kind of like a Twitter-esque stream with your friends and just your friends right next to it, so you guys could actually talk about what was going on. And what sucks is that they, you know, Facebook took that live application down. They only had it for that one time with CNN. But obviously, some of these companies out there, like CNN, are starting to kind of tinker, and they're starting to get it. But by and large, you're right. Like, they're not. They're just like,
CNN,
hey, this is...
had the Wolf Blitzer hologram, which will stand as the most innovative, brilliant, and necessary leap forward in news journalism.
I have never watched the news the same way since. No matter what I turn on, I don't know if it's a hologram. I don't know if it's real.
Oh, come on. Yo, we just need to get Max Headroom back and we'll be all set.
Dude, that would be amazing.
Mm-mm-mm. Loves me the Max Headroom.
Well, really, you know, if Hologram Wolf Blitzer just had worse buffering, he would have been a Max Headroom.
Yeah. Well, Wolf wasn't the hologram himself. He had some field reporter.
Oh, that's right. It was, was a woman, I think, was the hologram.
I was waiting for her to say, you know, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
That would well, were they using that, like, Cisco teleconferencing technology that they use for I've seen some videos of it online where they've had guys in like California and India talking like they were standing right next to each other, but one of them was a hologram. Is that what they were using?
I don't know. This lady looked blue. I mean, she looked like Princess Leia.
Oh yeah, but, so it was poorly done.
I think what you've got with like the networks in particular, using that example, is that, like you said, you've got these huge conglomerate, you know, these huge corporations that are like juggernauts. I think they don't come up to the times as easy as like some of the younger people do. And I think that's part of what you've got the resistance of, going to the MP3s or, you know, not buying into the upfront availability of their shows.
Well,
right,
I mean, that's
now,
what the internet
because
was
they're like, well, this is what we used to be. This has worked for us for 50 plus years. We don't need to change now, but they don't realize that. Yeah, you do. And I think that's what, well, they are now, but I think it's interesting that, you know, they didn't really see that light and say 5 years ago or whatever. And they didn't listen to their people is what it amounts to. I mean, the young kids coming up could have told them this is what you need to do. But they're like, you're young and you don't know what you're talking about. But now they're starting to see the light of day. And I think, you know, you see that in all aspects of entertainment. And, you know,
I think for anyone that's worked in a corporation and tried to change anything in the culture, you understand what you're up against. In some cases, people just can't see it another way. In some cases, it's politics. Well, if we do it this way, then what do I lose control of? And how less important does my job or my role become? In some cases, just there's too much money tied up in it. They don't want to risk changing a multi-million or probably billion-dollar industry on trying something that's really, to this point, been untested. But the end result is that somebody's going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the nature of our society that if there is a need, somebody is going to step up and find a way to fill that need.
And get paid for it.
Yeah.
And they probably eventually get paid for it. But you can look at for how long things like Napster thrived on the MP3 trading. You can look at something like iTunes, and you know what? All along, I believe people would have been willing to pay for the stuff, but nobody was offering it for sale.
Mm-hmm.
And so people found some way to do it anyway. I see the same thing with like internet radio, podcasting. There are people that are stepping up to provide content the way that other folks want to consume it in the first place. So here's the question that I have related to role-playing games. Well, I guess that is the question. How do you guys think this relates to role-playing games? Are the role-playing game, well, we'll say tabletop game in general, role-playing games, board games, card games, and maybe we'll have to cover these each separately, but do you feel that these people are meeting the changing demands of their consumers? Or do you think there even is a change in the demand of the consumers? Is there a way that we want to consume these games that the companies right now are not providing?
I don't know. It's pretty easy to play in IRC. That's the biggest leap forward I can think of. Now, I know WotC is trying this whole online suite that is partially up now and partially not. I think they're going for a full-blown online tabletop, and I know some independent companies have done this before, where you have a grid map, and you have dice rollers, and you have a chat box, but as far as I know, most gamers, and myself included, consider that only a substitute when it has to be, and would prefer to just sit around a wood table with plastic dice and pencils and sheets of paper and do the thing.
Well, I think that's one of the things where I don't think the change in demand exists. I'm not saying there's nobody that wants to play the games online. I know lots of people that do. Yeah.
And I know lots of friends who I can't play with in Columbia, Missouri, who I like having the online option for.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you could hop on Ventrilo or something like that and play with these guys on a virtual tabletop. I'm not saying there's no demand there. But
what are you talking
about,
delivery of the actual product?
Maybe. The point I'm trying to make, though, is that I think most people, if they could, would still prefer to sit around a table with their buddies and play that way.
Yes.
I think where they really need to innovate is with the things that kind of go around play. And incidentally, none of this, I'm not going to claim any kind of expertise or research here. These are just my observations. I'm feeling my way through. So if you got your own observations, certainly hop by the forum at feartheboot.com and get in on this discussion. And, you know, if we have enough, maybe we'll even do a follow-up on this sometime later down the road. But I think where the innovation really needs to occur is in the stuff around the game. For example, I think WotC's taking some steps in the right direction by trying to give you things like character creators and managers online. Something to where you can cut down on a little bit of the math and a little bit of the paperwork, but you could still print it out and take it with you to the game.
Yeah, the power printouts are awesome. When I was at DDX last week, having the characters there with the little cards, you know, the powers printed on them, I mean, it worked really good for 4th edition. That is really cool.
I saw those on the Penny Arcade.
You can just flip those over, and when you've used them, or, you know, if they've got multiple uses, you just turn them like you're playing a CCG or something. But those are very useful. Really, really cool.
Something else I'm thinking about is, as we sit here in the electronic age, I would love to see game books that are delivered electronically. Now, before everyone jumps on the way, it's already happening with PDFs. Let me work through this thought. I think it would be great to have some kind of an ongoing subscription where, let's say, I pay $1 a month or $2 a month or $5 a month for, you know, all games pass sort of thing, where I can go to a game company and I can log on to their website and I have access to all the rule books for that game. As a new edition comes out, or as they make changes to the rules or put in errata or whatever, stuff's just changed instantly right there on the spot. Don't have to go buy another book. Don't have to lug books around. I can put it on my iPhone or any kind of PDA or on my laptop.
I don't know, but do you lose the old rules that way? Because I don't know about you, but
well, you could divert.
I and a lot of other gamers, I think, like to pepper in the old rules with
well,
the new.
Well, most document control systems out there that you see in big companies have some kind of version control, so where you could archive off versions based on changes. So the technology certainly exists. It's not being used in RPGs, at least not that I'm aware of, but the technology certainly exists. Now, I do not think PDFs fit that bill, and here's why. I think a PDF, with all, I got much love for the people that are PDF publishers. They're good people putting out great games, don't get me wrong. But in terms of consuming those games, I don't like PDFs because I think they're the worst of both worlds. You don't have a printed copy to flip through unless you go and print off 200 pages. So you have to have a computer or something to use it. Yet, in order to read it, you're scrolling top to bottom. This is something Ed pointed out in a conversation I was having with him. Typically, it is in a portrait layout, whereas most screens are actually wider than they are tall. Yeah. And trying to flip 30 pages over, or if you're not exactly sure where something is and flip back and forth, is really, really, really awkward. So what I would much rather see come out of this is some kind of an internally linked document that is designed for computers, something like a wiki or a series of HTML pages, where you get a little bit of content that's designed to fit on your computer screen. And rather than thumbing back and forth through pages, you could browse it the exact same way you browse a website. It just says, like, you need to roll against your this or that attribute, and then that attribute's a hyperlink. So you can click on that to go off to figure out more about that attribute, or click on a different link to see more combat rules.
You know, they did something like this a long time ago. They released the core rules, quote unquote, for second edition D&D on CD-ROM. And
oh, yeah, I remember.
Everything was clickable. There were dice rollers. There were character sheets. It was a nice little suite of software. And yeah, I would love to see designers simply publish content in that format because it was fun to use. I mean, I just got on and clicked around it for fun like we do Wikipedia.
Yeah, exactly. And it saved them print and distribution. I could just go out to wizardsofthecoast.com or wizards.com, I think it's actually their website, and pay $20 to download the 4E book.
You know, I think you're going to see that because just our society in general, with the electronic age, you know, coming as it is, I think you're just going to see a a move from like the paper media, like, you know, hardbound media or whatever, more to the electronic. I mean, we certainly are already, but I do wonder if, you know, at some point, what at one point in history,
right,
we're going to see like almost the diminishing of books. I don't think we'll ever not have books, but I just think, you know, it's everything's gonna be electronic, and that's how you
I don't
get
know
it.
Man, and in the law library I hang out, that books are for decoration.
Well,
everything is done online.
I mean, I think, you know,
I don't know. What about going a step further though? What about being able to like parse a setting and make your very own player handouts by, you know, I'm going to Greyhawk City and here's the map and here's some background information about three organizations that are available to you because we're starting a campaign, and making your very own 16-page player handout and then PODing it and being able to like sit down and say, here, this is the stuff, and it's using the official crap that came out of the publisher.
Yeah, I mean, that makes it really easy.
A modular setting system that you could rearrange to your liking. Yeah.
Right. Let's say you can add your own stuff. You know, I mean, let's say you've got it, you know, you can add your own GM notes of campaign management system. What is it? Obsidian Portal tries to do some of that stuff, right? But if you had something like that tied into an actual publisher's setting and rule set, I know nobody's doing it, but I mean, some of the stuff Wizards is doing is in the step in the right direction with the, you know, being able to generate your own characters. But as a GM, being able to actually, let's say, take Eberron and take the map of Sharn, take the races that are available in my game, add some GM notes and some primers, and then print it out, you know, have it arrive in your mailbox, you know, 2 weeks later or whatever it takes to get to your house, and, you know, charging you for it. Yeah, but at least you're giving them the tools to have some really cool stuff for the game table.
Eberron. I liked the concept. I really liked the contest and the fact that the dude who won it became a fixture of D&D canon. I just don't really like the setting that much. It just doesn't groove with me. I don't know how to explain it.
So let me make a comment and then ask a question. The comment I just want to offer as something of an aside, which is, I don't know that I see these kinds of distribution ever fully replacing traditional books.
No.
Because we RPG players, we're very tactile folks. Yeah. We want stacks of books. We want handfuls of dice. And as a result, I don't ever see this fully taking over the RPG industry. But what I do think it would do is offer another way of consuming this. It's variety. You know, if somebody wants to consume this a different way or wants to try something, and you know, something else this helps with is laziness. I may not be willing.
That's what I was thinking.
I may not be willing to go down to a game store to buy a new book, but if I can just hop on a website and pay $5 to download something that's actually usable to me, I'm not going to struggle with the way I do a PDF. It was actually usable content. I'm a lot more likely to do
I'll
that.
I'll even go a step farther on the laziness, dude. GMs, if all the production stuff is in a software suite, I mean, the players don't need it. Like Dancy was saying earlier, you have a handful of super transmitter purchaser folks, typically the game masters in the gaming community, and if you can market to them, we'll buy it if it makes our life easier.
Let me expound Ed's idea a little bit and see what you guys think about this. What would you think about a bit pay thing? For example, you go onto a gaming website and maybe you make the initial purchase to get the core rules. Okay, and you got to have the core rules. But when you're ready to run a game, there might be a setting book and maybe we have a pack of maps and maybe we have a pack of NPCs. And so you put in like $1 or $5 or something, and for 50 cents, I'll give you this map. And for 10 cents a piece, I'll give you these NPCs.
I would be all about it. If WotC got together a stable of like cheap, quick module designers, put them up for micropay with print offs of graphs and encounter blocks and stuff, I would go through dollars on those. Like,
so like our iTunes for RPGs.
I was just about to say, it's basically iTunes for that. I don't see how it wouldn't be wildly popular. I mean, look at iTunes. I think it's the same kind of thing.
Right.
I think it would translate over to role players.
Except like, instead of building an album, you're building an adventure.
Yeah. Exactly.
And a lot of people, awesome. they put a lot of content on their websites for free like that. Little mini adventures and stuff.
But even the players.
I would pay a micro payment for that.
Yeah.
Happily.
I mean, even the players could go on and like do character building in the same way. You know, I'm sure they could, you know, have content on there for that. So it wouldn't just be like for the game master. So I think it'd be great. And, you know, to further that along, I think, especially in the state, you know, what you were talking about before is, you know, we are tactile, but at the same time, I hate to lug around 4 or 5 books to a gaming session or whatever.
Right.
I would love to have just on whatever, say, a little PDA, whatever I have that's handy to me, I could flip through the books. If I've got a rule that I have a rules question, I can just go tap, tap, tap and find it and read it. And there you go.
See, Pat, that's why you got to be a slash and burn GM like me. I run out of one book.
And that's
I don't permit supplements at all.
It would be nice to be able to just to have it all in one little place to look it up quickly as opposed to having to look through. And I've had this experience with a lot of the rule books. They have horrible indexes or horrible,
The Earthdawn book.
There's nothing.
I'm starting in an Earthdawn you'll try to find IRC something. Campaign. And I like the setting. It looks cool. That core rule book is so bad.
Yeah. The only way in a lot of rule books that you know to find something is because you've read it enough that you're familiar with it and you know where it is.
Yeah.
You can't look at the front of it and say it should be here or even in the index and find it. I've never understood that. Why? How have they not figured this out to put a decent index in a rule book?
And make character creation streamlined.
Yes.
The poor PCs are not the crazy buyers and readers like DMs. They want to be able to go from page 1 to page 30 or 40 or whatever and make their character. The jumping around is just insane.
Yeah. So yeah, I really like the idea of like an online character generator. You know, something to make that easier.
See, that also
and especially make it look awesome. You know, print it out and you've got this thing. I hate taking a printed page that looks nice and then handwriting my crap in because I'm an engineer. You know, that means my handwriting looks like crap.
Yeah.
You know, it's a step above doctor, but not much. So if it's printed out, I love it. In fact, in the past, I have put together like Excel programs that would generate like a character sheet to make it look better.
Freeware, Excel,
I mean, everybody does that.
And I use them.
See, so this is also where I think the electronic versioning needs to be correct. Because you put a PDF on a PDA, you're going to go blind trying to read that thing.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
But if you have something like you just have hypertext mm-hmm. on a PDA, you can give somebody the information they need, a paragraph or two at a time, formatted to fit their screen. And let's take this even a little bit bigger. Let's say you're now on a laptop or tablet PC or something. You would just not have it hyperlinked, but what you could also do to save some of the flipping around John's talking about is you could have a lot of the stuff do on screen, like hover over pop-ups. Mm-hmm. So like, if you're like, okay, you need to make a save against this particular stat, and you don't remember how that stat was created, you may not even have to click off the page. You could just hover your mouse over that stat name, and like a little context thing would pop up, giving you the definition of that stat and how you calculate it.
Yep.
And, you know, there's move your mouse off of it when you're done reading that.
And that's great because there's a lot of times on the character sheets, you'll look at it and you'll see, how do you come up with this number? I know, because I'm going through, I play a little bit of 4th edition right now, mm-hmm. just very infrequently, and I'll probably play it next weekend, but I'm looking at these numbers and I'm thinking, I'm trying to figure out how they come up with a number. And I've played these things for years, so I know how they do it. And I was even confused. I'm like, I don't understand why this is a 32 instead of a 30. Where's that other 2 points
come from? Well, you have to read through a little bit for 4th edition. 4th edition is a bit of a jump.
But if you've got, like you're saying, if you've got that hover capability, it shows you right there. It'll say, you know, this is what this is composed of, and boom, there you go. And I think, Dan, I think that's where we're going. I can't see that we're not going that way. It's just a matter of when. Is it going to be 5 years? Is it 10 years in the future? But
somebody's got to try it, and the market has to reward them lavishly. I'm prepared to. I've got my credit card right here.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I think, you know, the iTunes is the today. It's so popular. Hopefully that's the way they're going to go. And maybe within 5 or 10 years, we're going to see that. Yeah. I think it'd be awesome.
Custom rule books. There's another one. We talked about building custom adventures. But would you guys also be interested in building custom rule books? What I mean by that is, for example, let's say a rule book, what we would consider today, a rule book and maybe 2 or 3 core supplements. Because, you know, most games, you've got the main rule book you have to have, but there's kind of those 2 or 3 indispensable supplements. And not every game has this, but you just really don't want to play without this one book over here. In Battletech, it might be a tech readout. In D&D, it's probably the monster manual.
D&D, I'll give the big three. I'll buy their PHB, their DMG, and their MM.
Right.
Everyone else, I'll buy their one rule
book. Or let's say, for example, we're doing a D&D game and I want to run Forgotten Realms. So maybe I need...
Okay, I'll accept that too. If you want to play a stock universe.
You may need a setting book. But picture once, and going back to this micropayment thing, if I could go online, it's like, okay, the character creation rules are this much. And then these combat rules cost this much. But what's the other big thing of new media? Well, new media is partially what you want, when you want, where you want, how you want. But the other thing is user-created content. So here's the original rules that came with it, the official rules that we're going to use in all of our living games, whatever else. But here are 2 or 3 alternate rule systems that some user submitted that were vetted by whoever runs the game company, Wizards in this case, because we're talking about
D&D. So you're essentially talking about mods.
Yes.
Open source modding.
I can say something like, on my micropayment, I'm going to take WotC's character creation system and WotC's gear chart, but I'm also going to add in the Forgotten Realms gear chart. And then the regular feats and the Forgotten Realm feats.
That
is interesting.
I did not think and to then, apply that, but it's, it could go
and
somewhere.
And then I don't like their combat system for armor. Maybe I like this one guy's way of doing armor better. And so I'm going to buy Bob's armor system instead of WotC's one. So I'm cherry picking rules from all these different source books to create the custom rule book for my game.
I like that idea. You would have to be a little more broad. I mean, you couldn't have one weapon hit system and a different armor value calculation system existing in one setting because they're tied to one another.
Well, right.
All they are is a relative reflection of the other.
Right. There'd have to be some compatibility checking for that. But I mean, assuming, because you can look at like what happened with the D20 OGL.
But you could say like, okay, we'll keep the combat system, but I'm running a gritty world and I want the economy to make sense. I just don't want to have gold buried everywhere. And by level 5, I don't want people to be walking Swiss banks.
Well, right,
so I'm going to buy Milton Friedman's hardcore capitalist D&D mod and plug it right in. Yeah, I would do that. G. Gordon Liddy would have a little tear of joy.
You could even use
the free-to-choose role-playing game.
Yes!
So depending on how you did this.
A personal statement.
You could even have like broadly applied rules mods. Like, for example, I'm going to take the basic rule book for a game. Like, let's move off D&D. Let's say Traveler. I'm going to take the basic Traveler game. But I like this one guy's mod for it that maybe it's not a new section, but actually kind of marks up and changes the rules all over. But once again, if on the code level, you have each of those rules handled as distinct items, you could change half a dozen things per chapter without changing the entire chapters. And I know you can do this because, once again, I program for a living.
Yeah.
And the ideas I'm talking about here are not newfangled ideas that are impossible and unheard of. They're just things that are not being done, or at least not being widely done. I'm sure as some indie company out there, it's already doing this. It's frothy and we haven't mentioned them. But these are
send us your product.
Yeah, send us your product. I'd love to look at it and talk about it. But these are the types of things that are not being broadly done within the RPG industry. But the technology is already out there. It already exists and it's already been well proven.
And it's done on technological levels much, much more complicated and intricate than role-playing games.
I mean, basically what you're talking about is the WordPress model with the plugins and stuff. I mean, you can make a plugin for WordPress to put, I don't know, my Twitter stream on the right-hand side of my blog, and that wasn't made by the WordPress guys. You know, right. It was made by some other dude. But you're also talking about being able to go in and let's say you're using Traveler. You know, let's say you're taking a plasma cannon. We're going to say that, a plasma drive. And instead of going, you know, 10 parsecs, you're only going 9 now. And that'll actually propagate out through the entire document so that all the stats that are calculated off of it are calculated correctly now. And we can do that because we're doing it through a computer.
I think really what it boils down to is, as of right now, generally speaking, in the RPG world, you think of a product as being a book. What you sell is a book from page 1 to page 200, or if it's Heroes, page 4,500, and that's your product. But now what you're really doing is you're taking the discrete elements of that, and that's the product. So, for example, the gear chart in this handbook is worth a quarter or worth 50 cents, and you could be buying that apart from anything else. You know, if you did this right, something you could even do is swap out the entire rule system, that you could have it. So if you want to play this in D20, that's great. If you want to play this in GURPS, you could pay a little bit and the whole book automatically recalculates itself into the GURPS system, but you still have the same basic game in place. And
I think you're sitting on a gold mine here, so to speak, in the fact that what you really are talking about is basically an infinite combinations of games that you could do going this way. Because right now, like you said, you've got to buy a book, and there are a lot of people that will buy that book, but there are a lot of people that won't, because they either don't want everything in it, or they just don't want to spend all that money on everything. But if you do it this way, just little changes here and there, you've got a whole different kind of a game, and they can sell the same core type of a game to a group of people, you know, multiple times, really, right? Because they'll make some changes and buy it again.
Gaming companies never do that.
Well, yeah, they do it already, but you know,
the only problem with it though is that you're going to have people, for instance, saying, well, you have to, you know, have this particular book to use this, you know, to use this game. Yeah. That's how they make their money. So like, they're not going to let you get away with, you have to have the player's handbook, or you have to have, you know, I don't know, Unisystem core rules, or you have to have whatever it is, Savage Worlds, you know, main book in order to play the Savage Worlds version. I don't know. I mean, unless you can work out with all these different companies to give them kickbacks on their micropayments. Yeah, I mean, it's doable, of course. Anything's possible when there's money involved, but that's probably the biggest hurdle.
If a game opens up its system like D20 did, I mean, we're talking as if these are all brilliant, brand new ideas, but a lot of this is the great D20 experiment.
Sure. It's just furthering it along. I mean, you know, like you said, they started it, but these are just some ideas of, hey, where to go in the future.
I'll tell you right now, what I hope comes out of this episode, there's actually already some things that I'm working on, some by myself, some things I'm working on with Ed, that are kind of along these lines. I don't want to go into detail on, because I've just learned the hard way. I'm just not going to tell people about things until they're done, because we've talked about too many things and not done them, or not done them very quickly. But we got stuff we're working on. But the thing that I would really love to see come out of this is for people to get out there and start doing this kind of stuff. For somebody, you know, let's create the demand to get this kind of thing, because I would love to see all these things that are changing music and television and hopefully someday movies as well. I would love to see those same forces be applied to my number one hobby and to be able to consume these games in exactly the way that I want to consume them, and to consume them with the content that I would like to consume them.
We could agitate the player base, and we know nobody in the gaming industry listens to this show, so that won't work. But we can hope.
So, Ed, let's talk about a product of ours that we're working on, or actually have, well, at least put into release that we can talk about, which is War Pig Radio.
Sure.
And what we're doing with that is we thought about it and said, you know, we are not aware of any currently in existence, or even any in the past, of 24-hour streaming gaming content. Like, basically what we do with these podcasts, but instead of a podcast, it's more of like a 24-hour radio station. And we see this really as appealing to two demographics that we don't think currently are being fed. One are people that may already even listen to podcasts, but they just kind of have that, let's see what's on right now sort of mentality. I'm going to be at work for the next 8 hours, or I'm going to be cleaning the house for the next 4 hours. And so I just want something I can just leave on in the background and forget about. Or maybe I just want to hear something I haven't heard before because I'm really bored right now. And podcasts really don't service that demographic, because you have to know the contents there and go out and choose to get it. The second demographic is gaming stores. Since starting Fear the Boot, I have been contacted on multiple occasions by gaming stores that are asking permission to play Fear the Boot shows over the speakers at their stores, because they don't want to play Muzak, but just like Blockbuster has little loops of movie clips, they would love to have something relevant playing over their speakers.
The GameStop ad tape. When I worked at GameStop, I became very intimate with that 30 minutes of loop. Anyway,
over,
but I know what you're talking
over,
about.
Well, this is
over.
Day in and day out.
We have put together a streaming radio station, which you guys can find at warpigradio.com, and I'll link this off the show notes. Go out there, take a listen. Right now, we have a pretty long stretch of stuff. We're working on some more content. It's not 30 minutes. It's a lot more than 30 minutes. But we have a stretch of stuff out there. We have shows coming in from a ton of different really good gaming podcasts. We have a couple more podcasts that we're preparing to put into the loop, some of which are gaming shows, some of which are not. And we're also in the process right now of developing new content. So the station right now, it's very, very young. I mean, this is a little toddler of a project.
It's like 2 weeks old, yeah.
Yeah, it's like 2 weeks old. It's in release form, though. It's usable. The technology works. We have some great content out there. But we're in the process of developing more. So if you guys want to get in on the ground floor of this, go out and check it out at warpigradio.com. And also, by the time this show drops, we will have information up there on the shows we currently have, the shows we're about to add, and also the steps you need to take if you'd either like to submit some of your own content or to request us to develop content that speaks to a particular demographic. Now, RPGs and tabletop games are going to be the centerpiece of this show, but they're not the only thing we're talking about, because we decided to go a little bit broader, and we are going to do some stuff about science fiction and probably eventually do some anime stuff. Because, you know, if you walk into most game stores, they're not just selling role-playing games. So we're trying.
War Pig is internet radio for the gamerati, and we all like comics.
Gamerati.
That's right, man. It's, you know, we all like comics and, you know, BSG or whatever, all the stuff that we care about. We
oh
wanted
my God,
to do it.
Last night's was so good.
Yeah, so, I mean, what we're trying to do is give you something that you want to listen to, either while you're on your IRC channel or whether you have a store and you have customers walking around in there and you want to give them something entertaining and informative. That's what we're after. So if you guys want to, you know, give us feedback, give it in droves. We want to hear it. And if you have suggestions, we want to hear those too. And if you have a store or a website, you can syndicate it out there. If you have suggestions of what you'd like to hear, what you'd like to see, hey, we've got an email on there. So make sure you get in contact with us, because this is only going to be as good as what you guys tell us you right. want. So,
and the email address, if you're not in front of a computer right now, which in which case you couldn't be sending email anyway, but if you just want to hear it, it's warpigradio@gmail.com. So if you got any suggestions, send them there. If you send them to my email address at Fear the Boot, everybody knows I'm horrific about checking my email, so I can't guarantee what will happen to it. But Ed's better than I am. So if you go to warpigradio@gmail.com, he will definitely get that feedback and let me know about things I need to know about, and we'll proceed from there. Ed, real quick, before we sign this out, you want to give us 30 seconds? You just launched another show in addition to Atomic Array. Want to talk about that new one real quick?
Oh, yeah. Ron and I have been talking about this for like 9 months. We've been wanting to do kind of like Casey Kasem meets RPGs, you know, just count down the best RPG products on a regular basis. So about, geez, I think it was in late November, I was online with James Matthey from One Bookshelf. And I just said, you know what, I'm going to pitch it to him. I'm going to see if they want to pick it up and sponsor it. And 2 days later, RPG Now said that, yeah, sure, we will sponsor the RPG Countdown. So we just launched it on January 28th was our first episode. And we take the top 10 selling RPG products. And we just kind of go in there, get interviews with the designers. And, you know, number three this week, you know, it's entertaining. It's meant to be fun. It's a fun time. It's only 15 minutes long, but we really like it, and we think it's fun.
It's at rpgcountdown.com. Is that correct?
Right, and it's also on War Pig Radio.
Okay, and we'll put that into the show notes as well.
Cool, man.
So thank you, Ed, for joining us. And John, it's good to see you back from
your
law school prison. So thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
Take it easy.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.